is Baseball Today.
First and foremost, I'm a baseball player.
Baseball is a funny game. There's a round ball that comes in a square box.
And then I ended up getting up and talking. I started to really get going, and I had to kind of cut myself off.
I know the fans are great. You know, this is where I wanted to be from day one.
Play ball!
Baseball Today.
Hi there. Welcome to the Baseball Today. It's Wednesday, April 7th, 2010. I am Eric Carabel behind the glass, Jay Soderberg, and we're going to be talking a lot of baseball today, taking your emails, looking ahead to the games that matter. Not a big day of baseball on Tuesday, but we'll discuss that as well with our special guest, bringing him back. It's Mark Simon from Baseball Tonight Research. Did such a great job last week. Mark, welcome back to Baseball Today.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it. Yep. This way I don't lose my voice every time we do a show. Mark, this is, I guess, day four of the season. The season started on Sunday night. And Wednesday is the fourth day after the... Yeah, okay, getting my abacus out here. Just off the top of your head, what has caught your eye in the first 3 days of the season?
You know what's caught my eye? How good the weather's been, just about everywhere.
Yeah.
And the result of that was you got a lot of home runs in these games. The season openers featured 41 home runs, which ranks among the greatest total for a season opener series of games in the history of baseball. There's only 2 years that beat that. And I think the weather had a lot to do with it. I mean, if you watched any of the games on TV, 70 and sunny, 75 and sunny, 80 degrees today on the East Coast. West Coast, obviously, it's going to be good. But I can't remember another year where the weather was this good for baseball at this point in the season.
Which is awesome, and why I was so angry that there weren't any day games on Tuesday. Because I was home and I wanted to watch baseball. And instead, I was watching Law & Order Special Victims Unit.
Oof.
Which I love,
you know.
But, you know, I want to see Matt Weir swing the bat, too.
Absolutely.
No, that's more important.
Well, you can watch some of the, I guess you can watch some of the Rears today if you have the right package.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what happened on Tuesday then. I'm looking at the ESPN stats and info notes from Tuesday in the TMI blog, the Max Info blog. And it was not a big day of baseball. There were only seven games. But what caught your eye on Tuesday in specific? I mean, Barry Zito with a nice effort there against the Astros, six shutout innings. That was pretty impressive. Another interesting game between the Mariners and Athletics coming down to extra innings or late in the game. What caught your eye on Tuesday?
All right, I'll give you a couple of things. One would be we could start with Zito. The thing that worked for Zito yesterday was that his curveball and his slider essentially were of the level of the Zito of old. We have a couple of groups that track pitches for us. And his performance in that start yesterday essentially was significantly different than the ones that he's had over the last few years because he was able to get so many strikes with his curveball and his slider. It was essentially like the Zito of Oakland days. He pitched six innings, gave up no runs. Last year, pitched on the road, I think it was 17 times. He only had one start like that, six innings, no runs, or better, the whole year. So essentially, you got out of Barry Zito his very best yesterday, and I thought that was pretty impressive, although I suppose it also tells you a little bit about the quality of the Astros offense.
Without Lance Berkman, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. American League, the takeaway that I got yesterday, what a great win for Tampa Bay. The Rays were down the entire game. Shields pitched okay, but not fantastic. Millwood gave the Orioles five innings in his debut. They get three innings out of the bullpen. Baltimore's up a run in the ninth inning, has a chance to get more. The Rays throw a guy out at the plate, keep the game alive. Soriano kind of shakes through the top of the ninth. Bottom of the ninth, Mike Gonzalez comes in. The Orioles have just spent this money to essentially revamp their closer role, throwing 93 on the gun, which was as fast as he's hit at any point, and strikes out the first guy. Next guy gets a hit, and Kelly Shopik almost wins the game with a two-run homer. And right there, you can sense that kind of the momentum of the game has turned. They wind up walking the next guy. Crawford gets the two-run hit to win the game. Tampa Bay, you don't want to put too much stock in an opening day game, but Tampa Bay is in a position where every game really counts because essentially they're working against the clock. They're working against the July 31st trade deadline. They've got to be in contention by the July 31st trade deadline or else Crawford's going to get traded, Pena's going to get traded, Soriano might get traded. So every win for them is really important. And they basically stole a game yesterday that they really shouldn't have won.
I think the Rays are going to be in this race all season long, and the teams they'll be in the race with, obviously, are the Yankees and the Red Sox. They've played two games. Have we learned anything about the Yankees and the Red Sox from the Sunday night and the Tuesday night games?
Biggest takeaway I got from the Red Sox is that their bullpen looks a little shaky. They threw, over the two games, I think it was about 150 pitches, which is essentially the equivalent of what an entire team should throw in one game. So they racked up a lot of pitches, and you saw yesterday they weren't very good. Okajima walks Nick Johnson with the bases loaded. They had a chance to get out of that inning before it even came to that, and Scudero makes the error. And, you know, you talk, our people were saying this all last night, you talk about pitching and defense as being the themes for the Red Sox season. You know, essentially the two games, we haven't seen either one from them. Beckett wasn't good. The bullpen wasn't good. It's hard to judge off one game. It is the Yankees that they're facing. When they get, you know, their 17, 18 games against the Blue Jays and the Orioles, they're certainly going to take advantage of that. But when these teams go head-to-head, bullpen certainly got to be a primary concern for both the Red Sox and the Yankees. I mean, Shane Ho gave up a home run in his first inning for the Yankees. Didn't give up a home run in relief all last year.
But you know what? I did not know that. I knew he gave up homers, but not in relief. And
yep.
I watched so much of Chan Ho last year.
Yep.
But I did find something interesting. Javid Chamberlain came in the eighth inning.
Yeah, he looked good.
Adrian Beltre and J.D. Drew both struck out swinging, and Java has been off-maligned on this show, The Baseball Today, for a couple of years now, mostly because of my old co-host, who I miss. And, you know, Java came out throwing strikes. If
yep.
Java has a 75-inning season with an ERA under 3, I mean, yeah, how are you going to beat the Yankees?
Exactly. I mean, especially, obviously, with Rivera backing it up. If he pitches like he did yesterday, they're going to win 105 games. It's because the game's going to become a seven-inning game, and their lineup is ridiculous.
Baseball Tonight has been very strong this week. Not that it ever is not strong, but I love the show, and I love some of the new analysts. I mean, Nomar, Aaron Boone, J.P. Ricciardi, terrific guys. I noticed in the TMI blog, you guys have been doing a Know Your Analyst thing. Tell us about this. Tell us about these new analysts.
Yeah, actually, I kind of got that kicked off yesterday. We had talked about doing that thing, putting up essentially a biography of the analyst from a statistical perspective, things that you might not know about them. With Aaron, we essentially took the home run that he hit against Tim Wakefield and spun it a whole bunch of different ways. One, it was an aberration. He was terrible against Wakefield in his career. And five times in a row after Wakefield gave up the home run to him, Wakefield got him out and got him out easily. That was one nugget. There was another statistic that's a little complicated to compute. We might get into it a little later. But it essentially said that Aaron was the third best hitter for the situation that he was in. 11th inning tie game, hits the walk-off home run. The other kicker was that Aaron had more walk-off home runs than all the other people in his family combined. And you know that his father played, his grandfather played, and his brother played. It was his brother's birthday yesterday. But he brings an interesting perspective because I think he brings a combination of intelligent analysis, really watching the game closely, and humor. He was talking yesterday about web gems and how he was going to have a hard time giving an outfielder credit for a web gem because from his eyes, from where the infield position is, he thinks that a lot of, you know, there are sometimes situations where catches can be kind of exaggerated. Kind of in a fun way he was bringing that up, and it was just an interesting perspective. I mean, he was very good on yesterday's show. Nomar Garciaparra was here for a couple of days, and he brought a very different perspective from what we've had. I don't know that we've had someone on the show that has as strong an expertise in hitting the baseball as Nomar does. He did a breakdown of Albert Pujols' swing with videotape that was really intricately done, and he looked like someone that was still eager to go out there and still swing the bat. JP brings the GM's perspective, kind of a combination of an analytic approach, but also the eye of someone that's watched the game for an extended period of time. And I think he's more into the eye test than he is the statistical side, but I think you'll get a blend of that over the course of the season.
Obviously, we all know Nomar put up some outstanding numbers early in his career.
Yep.
I remember Aaron Boone when he almost went 30-30.
Yeah, that was
Reds.
That was like 99.
It was 2002.
Yeah, it was okay. It was
26 homers, 87 ribs, 32 steals, and I had him eligible at second base that year because he played a couple games in that league, or maybe it was shortstop. Either way, yeah, he played 16 games with short in 2002,
yep.
And then he played second base the next year for 19 games, which was weird. He was really a third baseman.
He was actually on the 99 Reds team, just getting back to that invented, at least in by his viewpoint, the walk-off celebration, where you jump on the plate and everyone kind of does the bunny hop where
Is
they go
right?
up and down and up and down. They had a whole bunch of walk-off wins at the end of the year. Pokey Reese hit a really big home run late, and he jumped on the plate, and everyone kind of jumped on him and bopped up and down, and that's kind of where this whole tradition seems to have started.
I love baseball. I never knew that.
And I got another one for you.
Let's hear it.
This one is kudos to Dan Shulman and Jeremy Lundblad, who looked this up for him, and I went and looked it up. Aaron Boone in his first major league game got tossed.
Is that right?
Yes.
What did he do?
Oh boy,
I'm on his page.
My memory here.
But. I'm gonna look. I mean, I'm sure other guys have gotten tossed. Didn't John Lannan get tossed in his first game by hitting Utley and Ryan Howard?
That rings a bell. You know what? I knew I shouldn't have brought it up unless I knew the whole story.
No, I'm not trying to be mean. I'm looking at his first game ever.
Yep.
Is 1997, June 20th at Busch Stadium.
Yep.
And he did get replaced. It doesn't say here, but he was 1-for-3 with an RBI.
He got tossed.
Jeff Branson.
I think the quote after the game was, when are you going to see a debut that has a little bit of everything? Because he essentially
terrific.
Was involved in the game in every way.
By the way, I'd be remiss, and I do plan on doing this every day. Birthdays today. Happy birthday to John McGraw. He's not really with us anymore. Bobby Doerr, Red Sox great, Hall of Famer. Those are the two Hall of Famers. And then of current players, Adrian Beltre.
Yep.
Ronnie Belliard, Brett Tomko still in the bigs. Vinny Rotino, backup Brewers catcher for a year or two.
Can I give you a birthday anecdote while we got it? It has
sure.
nothing to do with today and birthday.
The show is yours. Let's hear it.
My birthday is January 31st, which I consider to be the best birthday in baseball history.
Okay, why?
Nolan Ryan,
that's
Jackie
cool.
Robinson, Ernie Banks.
That's not bad. That's not bad.
Also Rafael Santana, but that doesn't quite measure up.
I'm looking right now at Unieski Betancourt, too. Okay, so you got to take the good with the bad there.
Yep.
My birthday, yep. by the way, since we're on it, is also an excellent birthday. Ricky Henderson, my birthday's Christmas. So Ricky Henderson was born that day.
Yep.
Nellie Fox, and I'm trying to think if there's anyone else. Pud Galvin. You know, I share something with Pud Galvin.
19th century legend.
Absolutely. Among current players, not so good. Willie Taveras, Hideki Okajima, Waldis Joaquin, who I think is, what, a Texas reliever now.
Yep.
So, yeah, not a whole lot of Christmas. But, hey, Ricky Henderson, he was awesome.
Absolutely.
He was awesome.
We should tell people, too, that that's the kind of thing that if you go on the net, you can look it up pretty easily.
Let's tell them where. It's on baseballreference.com. Yep. I'm on that site more than any other site.
Yeah, they have
except ESPN, of course.
They have a section called Frivolities, and
right.
it's worth checking out because they have
there's
they
some
have
great stuff on
perfect.
There.
Yep.
You can find awesome stuff. All right, I guess, look. If you love baseball, you're listening to the show, and you love this kind of conversation. It doesn't always have to be about Yankees and Red Sox. We can also talk about this. I get the impression we're going to be talking a lot about Jason Hayward this season. That first swing against Carlos Zambrano, the ball left the park like a shot. I don't know how far it went, but watching Hayward in that at-bat, I was like, this guy's going to be a monster now. Don't even wait. He's the rookie of the year. He's going to be awesome. And I was trying to think of comparisons. I mean, a lefty hitter like that, I mean, he's better than different than Strawberry.
Right.
Different swing. Fred McGriff's name was brought up. I mean, what do you think of Hayward just from one game?
It was really impressive. I always tell people to wait, and I'm sure that you, in your fantasy baseball travels, it's very hard to make a judgment off, you know, essentially one swing. And people are going to get caught up in that, much like in I don't mean to be kind of mean here, but much like people got caught up in Dontrell. And Dontrell was 11-2, and Dontrell was going to change the game, and Dontrell was going to be fantastic. Well, Dontrell's kind of gone down a pretty weird road since then. It was impressive. I do know the distance. Here's what happened, just so you have an idea. We have a system this year with this website, Hit Tracker Online, by which we're able to get home run distances within about a couple of minutes after the home run is hit. We're not using the ballpark distance. We're calculating it on our own based on essentially the speed of the ball off the bat, how long it takes to land, and where it lands. And they have these intricate design, they have these intricate blueprints of all the major league ballparks, and they can pinpoint the spot where it lands. Jason Hayward, when we originally took a look at it, we had it at about 450 feet. They went back the next day because someone in the ballpark had pointed out that the ball actually went a little bit further. It landed in a different spot than people initially thought. So they went and they measured it again using our system, and it came out, I think it was to 476, and it traveled off the bat at better than 120 miles per hour, which was easily the fastest home run of the night the other day. So for one swing, hey, he's the greatest player in baseball.
476 for your first swing in the majors.
Yep.
That's never been done. That's incomprehensible.
It's pretty ridiculous. But admittedly, It's one swing. It's one game. We haven't seen his weaknesses yet.
Well, I don't know what his weaknesses are because the plate discipline is certainly not one of them.
Right. Yeah, his minor league numbers in that regard were excellent.
His spring numbers were terrific. He can run. He can throw. Monster. And as a Phillies fan, I'm going to be thinking about him for the next 12 years the way I did growing up with Dave Parker in my division. Like,
sure.
Please leave.
You know what? Maybe a comparison is one of our guys. Maybe he's a left-handed Dave Winfield.
All right. Yeah, tall, big, strong. I can see that. Can steal bases. Dave Winfield, wow. Ugh, if he's that good. All right, let's get to some emails here because you answered an email last week, and I think we should keep doing it because it's good stuff, statistically oriented.
Sure.
And people, of course, can send their emails to baseballtoday@espnradio.com. Mike Golob in Detroit, what do you consider the most important stats in determining player value? For offense, I like OPS, hits with runners in scoring position, and hits with runners in scoring position with two outs. If I had to pick one, I guess I like hits with runners in scoring position, which is a pretty good measure of clutch hitting. Oh, I got a problem with that. For pitchers, I like the whip and the ratios of innings pitched to strikeouts, hits, and walks. I think it's important to pitch efficiently and miss bats if needed. Please add your own favorites. I do not believe in the art of clutch hitting. Am I right or wrong?
Uh-oh. Well, I like what he said. I think OPS is a good way to go, even though mathematically it kind of goes against what you're supposed to do. You're not really supposed to add those two numbers, but it gives you a measure of a player's ability to get on base, and it gives you a measure of slugging percentage. I like clutch hitting. I like measuring situational play. There are a number of ways you can do that. Batting average with runners in scoring position is one of them, but the thing that doesn't take into account, what was the situation of the game?
Yes,
were you winning by two? Were you losing by 10? There's a method that you can actually use, and it's a little tricky, but you can use to evaluate situational performance. If you were to go to Google and type in what's called win probability added, you can go online and find this. What it is essentially this. I'm playing you in baseball. Albert Pujols comes up to the plate, and I'm essentially pitching to Albert Pujols on your team. I'm up two runs. It's the ninth inning. If you look at the history of baseball, that situation, up two runs, let's say man on first, nobody out, you win about 5% of the time. I win 95% of the time. Albert Pujols hits a home run. The game's tied. We're even, Steven, ninth inning, you're up, I'm still pitching. Now, the situation is that you win about 50% of the time. So you win about, you essentially have taken your chance of winning from 5% to 50%. That's a great swing, right?
Absolutely. I mean, one swing can change all that. But,
right.
I mean, you don't know that he can continue to do. Like, clutch hitting to me,
right.
You need a much larger sample size from just one year.
Right.
One.
But you can essentially, you can accumulate the performance of a player in those situations over time, as you're saying, and study it over a series of years, and you can determine who had the most big hits in the most important spots.
Okay.
And that's the principle behind the statistic. Now, it doesn't, the mathematics, the 5% going to 50%, that doesn't weigh in who's on the mound, what ballpark you're in. It doesn't weigh in a lot of factors. It just tells you, history of baseball, you just went from 5% to 50%. And Albert Pujols should get credit for the 45% swing. You add all his credits and his debits, kind of like the fielding stats that we talked about last week, and you can accumulate a number that will tell you who the best situational performers are.
Very interesting. I agree that OPS is a good one. I like on base and slugging, obviously, like that.
Yep.
And win shares I look at. And per pitcher's whip ratios. K per nine is important. Walk rates are important. You know, obviously you want to have a pitcher pitch efficiently and miss bats. You want him to be Roy Halladay if you can.
Right. I think that our listener is on the right track totally with what he's talking about. I would say just kind of open yourself up to kind of see what's out there. Go to our TMI blog, read some of the FanGraphs articles, read some of the articles. We have this guy, he's kind of unique in the field. His name's Tom Tango, mm-hmm. and that is, from what I understand, his real name. He writes about things from the perspective, essentially, of what I just talked about, and he consults for major league teams, and he can explain situational performance in a way that you might not have previously looked at before.
The TMI blog is awesome. I recommend everybody go check that out. Anything you're looking for on Wednesday? Obviously, Yankees-Red Sox is the game on ESPN2 tonight.
Yep.
Andy Pettit, John Lackey. I think we know those two guys pretty well.
Yep.
But anything else noteworthy you're watching for on Wednesday?
Rich Harden's debut for the Rangers would be another one. They are certainly counting on him to be a big part of their rotation. I guess if you're watching a late West Coast game, it would be curious to see what Ian Kennedy does for the Diamondbacks. You got a couple of afternoon games today, certainly with the Giants going for the sweep. And how nice is it for San Francisco to be 2-0 and be starting Kane in their third game? And then I'll give you one other thing, because I sent something to the folks at ESPN New York, and I don't know if they've put it up yet. I'll be curious to see how John Maintit does today. We didn't talk Mets at all. They look good in their first game. They should have looked good. Johan was pitching. Everyone's trying to turn the page. David Wright hits a home run to a part of the ballpark where the Mets didn't hit a home run all last year. It's a feel-good kind of day. Now you're kind of back to reality, and you're looking at John Main, and you're hoping that he has a really good performance. Last year at Citi Field, he was fantastic. He had an ERA that was sub-2. He uses the ballpark very well. He'll pitch high in the zone. He'll take the fly balls, because the fly balls aren't going to leave the park. The fly balls are going to get caught in the gaps in left and right center field. If he's on today, he should have a good day. If he's off and giving up home runs, and that could be a sign that he's going to struggle a bit.
John Main against Ricky Nolasco, the Florida Marlins right-hander, said he's not going to walk 30 hitters. Was it 25 or 30 hitters?
He said he wants, I think, more wins than walks, was it?
Good luck, man, because I don't know if that had ever been done. Brett Saberhagen,
that's like a Saberhagen kind of, that's exactly
Maddox
how I was
and Saberhagen, maybe?
Yep.
By the way, I had Buster Olney on yesterday's show, and we were talking... We did birthdays.
Oh, boy.
And one of the birthdays was Ernie Lombardi. And he said to me, Eric, do you know why Ernie Lombardi is significant with Joe Mauer? And I did.
Yep.
I knew that he was one of the
batting titles.
Batting title. Only two catchers before Mauer had done it. You know off the top of your head who the other one was?
Oh, boy.
And I got it. I was lucky. I got it. And then I was emailing last night with Buster. I'm like, I don't know why Bubbles Hargrave is in my head.
Rats.
But Bubbles Hargrave, look that up, and thanks to the people who pointed it out on Facebook
as well. If you go back to the early part, when you're doing birthdays, I think it's always good to pull out some of the real goofy names of the early part of the 20th century. That was kind of a standard that was set in baseball. You had guys like Phenomenal Smith and Icebox Chamberlain, and you had all these goofy, ridiculous names, and it evolved into the 20s and 30s, and then kind of, I guess people got with the times, and they kind of cut those down a little bit. But it's hysterical to go back and look, and then every so often we'll say, you know, such and such was the first pitcher to do this since Phenomenal Smith, and everyone on the show will laugh. It's one of those neat things that you can do, again, with some of the tools that are out there on the Internet.
And we say happy birthday, Milo Lockwood, born in 1858. Milo. You don't see a lot of Milos these days. But
no, you don't. In fact, I got one old-time stat for you. It was the first time yesterday that the Orioles had lost a game on opening day by walk-off in, 96 years. 1914 was the last time.
1914.
Yeah. They usually open at home.
When they were the St. Louis Browns. They were the
exactly.
Browns then, right?
Yep. That's they usually nice. Open at home, so it's a little misleading, but still, 96 years is 96 years.
Okay, we need to make you a regular on this show. Mark Simon, Baseball Tonight Research, check out the TMI blog. Excellent stuff. You love baseball, I love baseball. Thanks for joining us here on the Baseball
Absolutely,
today.
Anytime.
You got it. All right, so honestly, awesome stuff there from Mark Simon, friend of the show, Baseball Tonight researcher, TMI blog. You know where to find him. And there was good stuff from him last week as well. We'll try to make him a regular. All right, moving on now. It's time for a brief Around the Diamond.
News from around the league.
Let's go Around the Diamond.
Listen to this quote. David Ortiz is not happy. The media in Boston all over him because he's off to a slow start again. A slow start? It's two games. But listen to this sound, courtesy WEEI.
Two f***ing gang off, right? My f***ing going crazy.
So with that, man?
F***ing 160 games.
Yeah.
Hey. I'm going to go ahead and hit for me.
He's not happy. basically reporters are like, are you going to have a slow start again? And he's saying, come on, it's two games. But he said it in a little bit more of an a different type of way. Let's put it that way. Other stuff, good news out of Houston Street, no major shoulder damage. That's obviously good news for the Colorado Rockies. Jose Reyes, good news, a couple hits on rehab. He might come back on Saturday. The percentage of foreign-born Major League Baseball players drops. I have no idea why or whether that is important. And the Yankees president said to the Brewers owner, stop whining. That is a great story. If you want to hear more about that, they talked about it on Mike and Mike on Wednesday, and they just talked about it a lot. But Andrew Marchand from ESPNNewYork.com, which you should check out, got the sound from New York Yankees president Randy Levine. And basically, Milwaukee Brewers owner Mark Attanasio is just whining that the Yankees infield costs more than his entire team. Look, you know what I feel about this. Yeah, obviously salaries are different for some teams. The Yankees have $200 million, the Brewers have $80 million. But you can still win with $80 million, and you know, there's revenue sharing. So the Yankees have done nothing wrong. They're just following the rules. In terms of what happened in Wednesday's games, in Tuesday's games, I mean, only seven games, which is lame. Zito looked great. Yankees beat the Red Sox. Now everybody in New York can calm down there. Ian Stewart is a monster. And I think he's going to hit 30 home runs. He's got two already. He's going to move up in the batting order at some point very soon. Big win for the Rays. Although, again, even if they had lost, wouldn't have ended their season. And Joe Mauer, the first support, could be 30 home runs out of him. Mauer, Morneau, and Hardy all homered in that game as they beat the Angels. John Roush's first save. That's about it for the news. How about a brief time with some more emails? Call to the pen.
Call to the pen. You've got email.
I've already got one on the show, and where's the rest here? Oh, baseballtoday@espnway.com is the email address. Brandon in Cincinnati, just thought I would send you a question from the States. Yay, Brandon! I appreciate that. Finally got an email from the United States. With rotation set, there are a lot of young pitchers heading to the minors, obviously Strasburg, but what about some of the other top prospects like Chris Tillman, Derek Holland, Trevor Cahill, or Aroldis Chapman? What young pitchers do you expect to make an impact in the big leagues this year? Obviously, Strasburg and Chapman, I think, are very similar. I mean, Strasburg's going to be a monster. I don't think he's up until June. Aroldis Chapman, not quite as good as Strasburg, but very good. And I think he'll be up before Strasburg. Different contractual obligations there. And I think, you know, the Reds feel like they can contend. Chris Tillman was sent down. Very odd. They opted for David Hernandez to be their fifth starter. I think Tillman's ready. Derek Holland's odd too. I mean, CJ Wilson's the fifth starter for the Rangers. I mean, Holland is ready. I mean, he showed some signs in the spring. Better K rate down the stretch last year. I think Derek Holland's going to make an impact. I still see him making at least 20 starts. Trevor Cahill's hurt. Hurt his left shoulder. He's a right-handed pitcher, but he's on the disabled list, not in the minor leagues. But when he's ready to pitch, he'll be back. What else do we have here? Chase Grooms in Lansdale, Pennsylvania. Lansdale, PA! I grew up not far from there, and lived not far from there recently. Happy opening week. Off the bat, I'd like to say I keep a scorecard for almost every game I watch, but I'm a huge dork. You don't have to be a dork to keep a scorecard, as we discussed on yesterday's show. Secondly, I had a terrible nightmare last night in which Stan the Man was holding a press conference in St. Louis, during which he announced that Albert Pujols was going to become a Yankee in 2012. Thankfully, I woke up. As a Cardinals fan, I obviously hope to high heaven that my nightmare never becomes a reality. But after the Joe Mauer signing with the Twins, I got to wondering about guys in our era that will play their entire career in one uniform of active players. Who do you think will be Cal Ripken, Tony Gwynn type like that? That's Chase in Lansdale, PA. I hope Pujols remains with the Cardinals too. I just think it's good for baseball. And look, I'll say this, okay? We know what teams I root for. Well, you know, myself and two of my kids have Donovan McNabb jerseys. It stinks that Donovan McNabb is no longer on the team. Not that I have a problem with him leaving. It's just, I think we've got like six Eagles jerseys between me, my wife, and our kids. And all those players are on another team or retired. I mean, we have a Javon Kurse jersey, a Brian Dawkins jersey, McNabb everywhere, Westbrook. It stinks when you become a fan of a team and you love a player. And I'm not saying I did with McNabb. It's different in football. But, like, I don't want to see Chase Utley play with another team or Jimmy Rollins another team or even, well, maybe Cole Hamels. We'll see how he does on Wednesday. But the point is, Pujols should be a Cardinal. I do not want to see him leave. Mauer should be a Twin. I got to think about this a little bit. I mean, Chipper Jones is obviously never going to play with another team other than the Braves. That's a good thing. But let me give me some time to think about other active players. Rivera and Jeter should never be with another team. Neither should Jorge Posada. I don't know if it cheapens his career so much, but, you know, you want to see, yeah, Hank Aaron should have been a Brave forever. You know, I mean, I guess he was. Who's the guy I'm thinking of? Willie Mays, the end of his career. I don't know. With the Mets. Just anyway. Let me think about that a little more and get to another show. I guess that was three emails, and since we went so long with Mark, not a whole lot else time for more emails, but maybe on Thursday we'll have some more time. Now, the view from third.
Almost home.
Taking a look at tonight's matchups.
This is the view from third.
I'm not contractually obligated to keep this every show to 30 minutes, but I think the goal is to keep them tight like that. What's happening? Yankees Red Sox on ESPN2 at 7:10 p.m. Eastern Time. Andy Pettit, John Lackey. Doesn't matter who wins the game. For the long term, it's just one game on the schedule. I think it would have been a bigger issue if the Yankees had lost on Tuesday, creating a situation where, wow, we don't really want to get swept. But, you know, losing two out of three to the other best teams in baseball is not that big a deal in the first week of the season. There are other games that matter a whole lot. On the schedule here, I'm interested in seeing Matt Cain pitch, obviously, for San Francisco. Giants starters have yet to allow a run to the Astros. And I think it would have been different if Lance Berkman was in the lineup. But still, Giants have good starting pitching, and Brian Wilson's a good closer. So it's a team that, you know, I didn't pick to win the National League West, and it's still only two games. But I'm interested to see how the Giants, you know, keep pitching. I mean, you got to assume Matt Cain's going to pitch well. How about that? Later on in the evening, Rich Harden for Texas. Not a great spring for him, not at all. Pitching against Brian Talbot. Brian Talbot, really? The Blue Jays couldn't find anyone better in the rotation than that. Fausto Carmona with a very good spring, pitching against Jake Peavy. I'm going to be interested to see how Carmona does. Dodgers with a really bad first game. I mean, even Joe Torre said, I can't find anything good about this when you give up, 11 runs to the Pirates. But Clayton Kershaw, a little bit different expectations than Vicente Padilla. I think Kershaw is going to step up and play well, and also important for the Cubs to not allow double-digit runs. They allowed 16 on opening day. Dempster against Jurgens, and you have to assume that will be a well-pitched game. At least I assume that. And what else? Of course, I'm going to be watching to see what the Mets do. John Main, Ricky Nolasco. Nolasco is really good, people. He did go to the minors briefly last season, but he could be a monster. I mean, a 200-inning guy with 200 strikeouts, I mean, if Florida scores some runs and defends, which they may not, I mean, he could be an 18-20 game winner. I mean, he's got that kind of ability. So that's what I'm watching on Wednesday, obviously, the game on ESPN2. But, you know, there's a lot of other baseball. It's good to see a full slate of games for the first time, 15 games on the schedule, and that won't be the case on Thursday. So obviously a lot to watch there. Is that about it? I think we've gone to 30 minutes at Jay's. Shaking his head. I'm in Bristol, Connecticut today, and that's awesome. That's it. All right. If you like Mark Simon, let us know. We'll keep using him on the show. I don't know what's happening on Thursday's show. It might just be me, which is fine. It gives us more time to answer emails and talk about a full slate of games from Wednesday. So I thank everybody for listening. Happy birthday to everybody out there who's celebrating their birthday. Enjoy the great weather here in the Northeast. For Jay Soderberg and Mark Simon, I am Eric Carabel. Good Wednesday. Talk to you Thursday.
Thanks for listening to Baseball Today. For more baseball talk, be sure to check out Baseball Tonight, Monday through Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and ESPNRadio.com.
Yeah, that's what we've been looking for.